podcast being recorded.
I think this is going to be the last this time in terms of the Sugya of Pidyon HaBen. Hopefully, next week we'll move on to the next mitzvah relates to parents and children. But this mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen that I wanted to just speak a little bit tonight is almost a little bit of a spillover, not so much in terms of the intricacies of the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen, but really almost the interplay between the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen and Dinei Mamonos in general. Because Pidyon HaBen is one of those mitzvahs that involves dollars and cents. I mean, a lot of mitzvahs involve dollars and cents in the sense of cost money to buy matzah, cost money to build a sukkah, cost money to buy lulav. But here, the mitzvah itself is actually the Mesidus HaKesef. So because of that, it actually touches on some very fundamental yesodos that relate to other areas of Dinei Mamonos. And the sugya begins really in the Gemara that we left off with last week in the first of the Mamakomos, Adav Chav Testament Days, where the Gemara is discussing the issue of a person who has only 5 shkolim to his name, or trying to figure out which Pidyon HaBen should he do. Should he do the Pidyon HaBen for his son? Or lo and behold, it turns out that he himself never received the Pidyon HaBen many years before. So the Gemara has a whole discussion back and forth, who takes precedence. So in the middle of this discussion, the Gemara raised the following issue. What if there are nechasim mishubadim that are thrown into this equation? Nechasim mishubadim means property, particularly days of Chazal, real estate, karka, that was owned by the father, but right now is no longer owned by him. Why is it no longer owned? He sold it subsequently. So this touches upon a complicated sugya in Dinei Mamonos. If a person incurs a chov, I owe money, I borrowed money from you, I damaged you, I entered into an agreement with you, whatever the case may be, I owe you X amount of money, and I own property at the time when that chov takes effect, those nechasim become what's called mishubadim. Those nechasim become almost like a lien, like a mortgage, so to speak. There's a lien on those on that property, and we seem to have the vacuuming schedule perfectly timed with our shia. So we had the exact same problem last week. Sorry, thank you. For those on Zoom, we just had to close the door. It's a little bit of outside interference, but I think we're okay. So a person incurs a chov, and he has property at the time of that chov, but now he no longer has that property. He sold the property to somebody else. So the question becomes whether the person who I owed the money to originally, does he have the right to go and take that property? Can he go collect from those nechasim? So that's the principle called shibur, the principle called nechasim mishubadim. So the Mishnah, the Gemara, the end of Masechet Bava Basra, we'll talk about it in a moment, we'll show it inside in a moment, basically tell us that it depends. If the chov, if let's say, for example, a loan is the easiest example, if a loan was taken out with a document, everything is documented, and we have Eidim, we have a regular shtar, called the Milvah B'shtar, then there's a principle of Shibud Nechasim, and the Malva, the person who lent me the money, can actually go and collect from property that was subsequently sold. However, if it's only a Milvah Ba'al Peh, if it's just a milva that took place, a loan that took place just between two friends in the presence of witnesses, but nothing was actually documented, there is no shtar, so then there is no shibud nechasim. Why that distinction is so, we're going to get to a moment from there. So it's with this background, the difference between a milva b'shtar and a milva b'al peh. Milva b'shtar lends itself to shibud nechasim. Milva b'al peh does not lend itself to shibud nechasim. The Gemara has a very strange question. What is Pidyon HaBen? Is Pidyon HaBen the equivalent of a milva b'shtar? Or is it an equivalent of a milva b'al peh? It's actually what's called a milva haksuva b'Torah. It's written in the Torah. It's a little bit of a joke. It's written in the Torah, so therefore it's like a document. It's not exactly what the Gemara means. So Gemara raises this question. Is a milva haksuva b'Torah kiksuva b'shtar danya? Or is a milva haksuva b'Torah lav kiksuva b'shtar danya? But that will be a real practical difference. A person became obligated to mitzvah Pidyon HaBen, either for himself or on behalf of his child. And after that point, he went ahead and sold off his nechasim. Can a kohen come and knock on his door and say, I'd like my 5 shkolim? And I say, I don't have any more. I don't have any money anymore. So the kohen says, what do you mean? But you have property. Don't you have things that you sold off? Can the kohen go after my property or not? Are the nechasim mishubadim to Pidyon HaBen or not? So comes the Gemara and presents this as a machlokes HaTanaim. Take a look at the first of the Mamakomos. Rabbi Yehuda Sabar, Milva Dechsiv Batorah Kiksuv B'Shtar Damim. Rabbi Yehuda's view was that a milva, a loan, or an obligation, like Pidyon HaBen, that's written in the Torah, is as if there's a document, and therefore there will be shibud. If we skip down to the next line, Rabbanan Sabri, There will not be a shiva. Now, what is this whole idea based on? Why is there a distinction between a milvah baal peh and a milvah bishtar? So comes the Gemara in the second of the Mamakamas, in the very end of Baba Basra, and tells us as follows. Just to give, for those who are in Kolobokir, give us a little bit of a perspective. This is on Daf Kuf Ayin Hey Amud Beis in Baba Basra. We are now on Daf Beis Amud Beis, and we've been learning since the end of August. So I guess everyone just have an idea about at the rate that we're going. So we should all live and be well. In terms of finishing Baba Basra. So comes the Gemara in the end of Baba Basra and says the following. Amu Ula. Dvar Torah, min ha-Torah, echad milvah b'shtar, ve'echad milvah b'apeh, gov menachasim mishubodim. Midah araisa, if somebody owes you money, you have the right not only to go after the person themselves, you can go after the property that they sold. That's the dimin ha-Torah, shibudah deraisa. My time up, shibudah deraisa. Ve'ala matam omu milvah b'apeh, and a gov menachasim mishubodim. So why is it that the Mishnah tells us that if there's no document, you can only go after his own property. You can't go after the chas that he sold. Because it's not fair to the unaware buyers. And so I bought property from you. How in the world do I know that you owe $1 million to somebody? If there's a document, Bezdin knows about it, it's on record, we'll go find the files, we'll check it out. So then, okay, then we can say, the lekuchos, buy it your own, beware. But if it's a milvah b'al peh, no one's going to know about it. So somewhere there are Edom who know about it. The Edom went in China, they don't know where the Edom are. So there's no way to know about it. Therefore, the Lekuchos are going to get cheated out of their property.
Could the first Gemara 1 be talking about the Kohen, which is no different than our model or their opponent? And second Gemara could be talking about basement that has that price as a, Chalizah.
Right, so the truth is that the second case, the Basin is going to enforce the Halacha, but the Malva has a claim. The Malva could take the Lobo to a Dintar and say, pay me. The Lobo says, I don't have any profit. I don't have anything left. I sold it all off. I wasted all the money. So then the Basin will enable the Malva to go after the Nechassim.
No, the Kohen that is trying to take it out, he doesn't have
more light. Oh, Henry, it's very good. Excellent. So you're asking almost like a critical question. Wait a second. Who put this Kohen in charge to go collect Peter Abed? Isn't the Yisrael supposed to give the money to the Kohen? You're 100% right, assuming that the Yisrael is doing so. But if the Yisrael is twiddling his thumbs and doing nothing, then the Kohen has the right to go take it.
I would think Basin has the right, and the Kohen is the beneficiary.
Okay, so I mean, I'm not necessarily saying that the Kohen is going to have the guts to go and take the money himself, or even have the recourse to do that. But at the end of the day, the Kohen is going to get reimbursed. So here, Ula tells us that distinction between a milvah b'shtar and a milvah b'apeh is almost an artificial one on the level of the Rabbanim. Chazal changed the din deraisa, hefke bezin hefke, they changed the din deraisa and said, if it's only a milvah b'apeh, you have no right to collect from the nechas mishubanim because it's just simply not fair. But min haTorah, there really is no difference. Actually, the Gemara then a little bit later on about Vasa got chopped off a little bit at the end of the Marmakamos. The Gemara quotes the alternate approach that min haTorah, there's no such thing as shibud nechasim altogether. You never have a right to collect from anybody except the person himself who borrowed the money. The whole institution of shibud on a shtar is instituted mid the rabbanon to encourage people to lend money. Imagine you come to me and ask me for $1,000 loan. And I start to think, well, wait a second, I'm going to give this guy $1,000. He's going to lose the money in some faulty investment. I'm going to go knock on his door and ask him, pay me back from some of your land. And he's going to tell me the story that he sold the land off already. So I'm going to get nothing. So that's the min haTorah, according to the second opinion of the Gemara. Min haTorah, tough luck. If the lova doesn't have money, you can't collect. Chazal changed the din deraisa and said, if it's a milvah b'shtar, then we will let you collect the money. So everybody agrees to the same conclusion. If the Mishnah says a milvah basra, milvah b'shtar, there is shibud nechasim. Milvah b'apeh, there's no shibud nechasim. How we got to that point is a machlokes. But the bottom line is that distinction is correct for halacha. And now the Gemara is just not sure what to do with this Pidgin HaBen story. Is Pidgin HaBen the equivalent of a milvah b'shtar or the equivalent of a milvah b'apeh? So now comes the Gemara, the third of the Mamakamas, and throws a curveball at us in the sugya of paying back chovos, paying back loans, or other kinds of debts. Amar Rav Kahana, Rav Papa. Rav Kahana posed the question to Rav Papa. The didachta amras priyas malchov mitzvah. There's one opinion in the Gemara, happens to be Rav Papa's opinion, who says that when I borrow money from you, what is the ultimate engine that's driving me to pay back that loan? Why do I have to pay back the loan? I buy money. Pay money. What makes me return the money? So other opinions, the Gemara said, what makes you return the money? You have somebody else's money in your hands. You borrowed $1,000, so you owe him $1,000. Comes Rav Pop and says, of course you have to pay the money back, but it's not a monetary obligation, it's a religious obligation. Priyas b'chol mitzvah. Honesty and ethics and morality and integrity dictate you borrowed $1,000, so you gave your word, you're going to pay back the $1,000. So there's a fundamental machlokes amoraim. What is it ultimately that makes me pay back my debts? Everyone agrees you pay back your debt. Nobody says I can borrow $1,000 and skip town, go to Australia, disappear off the face of the earth. Everyone agrees you can't do that. But why can't I do that? What is halachically incorrect with that scenario? So one opinion says, you're a thief. You're a ganav. You owed $1,000. You owe $1,000. You got to pay $1,000. And Republic says, no, I'm not really a thief. He gave me $1,000. Willingly, I didn't steal $1,000. He gave me $1,000. The fact that I have to repay him is, well, I told him I'm going to repay him. Hint tzedek. You tell the truth. Of course, you have to repay him. So Rav Kahana turns to Rav Pop and says, according to you, the Amos Pias Bachov mitzvah, Omar lo michali de eved mitzvah man. Imagine the following scenario. I lent you $1,000. I come to you a month later, and after I say, pay me back the $1,000. If you hold that you're a gazlan if you don't return me the $1,000, so of course Beis Din is going to prevent gazel. Of course Beis Din is going to step into the situation. What if you hold that it's simply a religious moral obligation to return money that you promised you're going to give back? The guy says, I'm not so moral. I'm not so frum. I'm a shock. I'm a liar. Go do me something. No nichle di avi mitzvah. I don't want to put on film today. I don't want to shake a loof today. And I don't want to pick back my debts today. Go force me. What do you do now? I'm away. So Rav Papa responded, Tanina, we learned. The man of Amun b'mitzvah losos ever. Mitzvah sasei. Yon she'omu lo asei sukhavenu oseh. Lula vienu oseh. Makra such a tetin asha. What if a person doesn't want to do other mitzvahs? So we live in a world where we don't have the ability to be code for people to do mitzvahs anymore. We live in a little bit of a different secular society. But in theory, Beis Din has a right to intercede and to say, what do you don't want to do mitzvahs? That's not an option in this world. So if you don't want to do mitzvahs willingly, we will do the mitzvahs for you. And that's exactly what Papa says. You don't want to be honest, we'll make you be honest. You don't want to pay back the $1,000 like you said you would, we'll take the money out of your account. We'll take the money out of your land, walk into your house and take away your furniture to make you do the mitzvah of paying back. So there is a notion of kofet ala mitzvahs, even to the extent of taking away a person's money. So now imagine, let's play this back to Pidgin Aben. A person says, I don't want to do Pidgin Aben. I'm not interested in doing the mitzvah Pidgin Aben. So now what option is available for the Beis Din? So Beis Din could come up to me and say, you don't want to do Pidgin Aben. You're the same guy who last week told us you don't want to pay back your chavos. You have a chuyuf to give Pidgin Aben. You don't want to do it? Thank you very much. Kofta says you have a rotzani. And if you don't say rotzani, we won't wait for your rotzani. We'll take your money anyway. So comes the Gemara, puts together all the pieces of this puzzle and says, Pidgin Aben can result in Dinim Ominous. Pidgin Aben can alter Dinim Ominous. If the person doesn't want to give the money and he has the means to give it, we're going to force him. We're going to take his money away. And if he doesn't have the money, but he has the chosim and shubadim, he has property that he sold, then we're going to deal with that. And according to one opinion, the Gemara is going to be shibud the chosim on that. Maybe according to the other opinion, it may fall short. According to one opinion, the Gemara, we are going to have shibud the chosim. So at the end of the day, Pidgin Aben, the last week we had this whole image, Pidgin Aben, it's a beautiful, and it is a beautiful mitzvah. We have a silver tray, and we have the babies, and we have the onions, and the garlics, and the bracha. It's all beautiful. That's what's supposed to happen. None of this is supposed to happen. This is halacha b'olamai. This is for the purpose of a lomda shashir on a Wednesday night at 9:30. That's not supposed to happen. That's supposed to have a fight between the kohen and the father as to who's paying the far shekel, whether we're knocking down and taking a mortgage on the guy's house to pay Pidgin Aben. That's not what's supposed to happen. But in the event that a person doesn't cooperate, Beis Din will have their mechanism, their methods, at least in a world where Beis Din functioned, Kedas Uchadim, so then the Beis Din would have their ways to actually get the money to help the person, so to speak, fulfill his mitzvah properly. So we're working with the assumption there will be, to some degree, a Shibud Nechosim when it comes to mitzvah Pidgin Aben. There's only one question now that remains for us to answer. And here we go, we're going to almost exit the realm of Dinim Mabonos back into the realm of mitzvah. When is the moment of Shibud Nechosim take effect? In a regular loan, when I borrow $1,000 from you, so the moment of truth is the moment that I borrowed $1,000. Any property that I owned at that point on, so is potentially mishubad to the chov, to the obligation. Any property that I sold beforehand, I sold property off on January 1st and I borrowed money on February 1st, you can't go off to that property. That's gone. That's finished. That's before the chov started. So at first glance, it's critical to identify when precisely is the moment in time of Pidgin Aben, because that's going to be the moment that everything we're talking about is going to kick in. That's when the shiva is going to start. That's when the 1,000 cents, the monetary obligation, is going to begin. So if I ask you, when is the moment of Pidgin Aben? You don't know the Chumash. The Torah says in Parashas Korach, Uftuyabi ben Chodesh Tifteh, after the baby is a month old. Okay, we may bump into a Machlokes Acharonim, how to define a month. Does a month mean a lunar month, i.e. 29 and a half plus days? Is that what it means? A total, you know, a lunar cycle? Or does a month mean halachically 30 days? Or maybe a month means halachically 31 days, depending on what you think in terms of what exactly the precise meaning of the word Chodesh is. So comes the Rambam with a startling statement in the fourth of the Mamakams. The Rambam describes a scenario. It's a very sad scenario. We hope, pray, never happens. But again, it's important for us to, you know, kind of read it a little bit emotionless and just kind of, you know, get to extract what the hardcore halacha is. The Rambam describes the following situation. You can have a case where a person, his wife, just had two boys, and believe it or not, this is not the sad part yet, this is just the confusing part, we don't know who the Bechor is. Nobody was paying attention. I guess what happened to the Parshas Vayeshev, one hand came out, they forgot to put the red strip, so they got confusion. So we know there's a Bechor here. There's no question there's a Bechor here, but we're just not quite sure which one is the Bechor. So if everyone's healthy and well and 31 days comes, so then we're going to insist on a Pidgin Aben taking place because we know the father's chayav in Pidgin Aben. We just don't know which baby it is. Now, this may sound strange, but the baby is the least important part of the Pidgin Aben. Namely, the baby doesn't even have to be the Pidgin Aben. I mean, we would never dream of doing a Pidgin Aben without the baby on the silver platter, you know, with his nice, fun Shabbos outfit. That's all true. But tachlis, the baby, you need a father and a kohen afashko. That's what you really need. You don't need anything else. So the actual Pidgin Aben is going to take place because, I mean, man of shach, the father of the chiyah, either it's baby A or it's baby B. The fact that somebody got confused in the hospital, that's not going to detract from the chiyah. But that's a whole other question. Let's say, you know, for in general in halacha, who identifies who was who when babies were born? That's a sugya b'seches kedushin. There's a special nemonos of the mialeves, what calls the midwife, or the modern day equivalent would probably be the doctor today. And that's a whole other story where that nemonos comes from. But here, the mice didn't have it. Nobody's paying attention. Nobody knows. But we definitely have it before here. We're just not sure which one it was. So now comes the Rambam in the fourth of the Ramakamos. And tells us, Meisa'av, what if now the father dies? Nebuchadnezzar, the father dies. And now who are we going to go to for the mitzvah Pidgin Aben? Father's not here anymore. So obviously we're going to go to the sons for the mitzvah Pidgin Aben. Catch this one. One son's going to say, what? Go after my brother. And the other son's going to say, go after my brother. In other words, each son has, in theory, a claim to say that you can't come after me, but it's true we can't come after either particular person, but what we can come after is the property, because the property belonged to the father at one time, and there was a shibud nechasim on that property. So now becomes a critical question. Did the shibud nechasim take effect or not? So if you would ask me, I would say, it depends when the father died. If the father died after a month, the chiyuv of Pidgin Aben already kicked in, and then the father subsequently died, just never got around to doing Pidgin Aben. And I understand the nechasim and mishubadim for the purpose of Pidgin Aben. But if the father died before 30 days, so there was no chiyuv. The loan didn't start. The obligation didn't kick in. So comes the Rambam and says, not true. What I just told you is not true, says the Rambam. Meisa'a ben besok shloshim yom, ben achar shloshim yom, ben shlochup, ben shlochup, yinostru, seishlom akayim, shefren ischaivu hanechasim. That the money already was obligation kicked in. The property was already meshubot for Pidgin Aben. Comes the Torah and says, he doesn't know what the Rambam is saying. It's against the Pasuk Chumash. The Torah says, Uftu Yav Ben Chodesh Tifta. Pidgin Aben starts after a month. It doesn't start before a month. What in the world did the Rambam mean? So here we have a fundamental question, a lumdish question, which gets more into the realm of the mitzvah Pidgin Aben. Up till now, it was very, you know, did the mamam so we had to get to the mitzvah Pidgin Aben. A fascinating shaila, a chakira. About the Zman of Pidgin Aben. A baby's born, we go through the checklist. It's a boy, it's a firstborn, the father's not a Kohen, father's not a Levi, mother's not a bas going, mother's not a bas Levi, it's not a Caesarian. It has seven for seven questions. You are going to have a Pidya Ben. Question is, when does the chi of a Pidya Ben begin? So one can understand this in two ways. Either one can understand, the chi of Pidya Ben has not started yet. The Zman Pidya Ben begins, as the Torah says, of doing a Ben Chodesh Tiftet. Doing a Pidya Ben before 30 days is kind of like blowing shofar before Shoshana. That may be, not be the best example, but that's only a minute we before. It's like shaking a lula before Sukkot. It's a better example. Lighting Neres Chanukah. I'm going to jump on the gun. I'm going to start lighting my menorah tonight. I'm going away in 2 weeks. So let me light my menorah tonight. A joke. It's not Yer Chanukah. If a person tries to do a Pidya Ben before 30 days, it's Mamash Leit Sonos. The mitzvah hasn't started yet. Or maybe no. Maybe that's not the pshat. Maybe the pshat is, the baby's born already. It's a Jewish baby. It's a Yisrael. It's not a Bas Koyin, not a Bas Levi, not a Caesarian. No miscarriage of birth. It's got all the trimmings of Pidya Ben. The Torah says, you don't have to do the Pidya Ben yet. You could wait until the Pidya Ben Chodesh Tiftet. When 30 days comes, Igloi Milsalim Afreya, it turns out retroactively, of course the baby was having Pidya Ben from day one. No one's rushing. No one's pressuring you to do it right away. But once 30 day, first day arrives, it turns out this baby was a Pidya Ben like a baby. And therefore, if you, for some reason, did the Pidya Ben before day 31, that is not like blowing shofar before Shoshana. It's not like eating matzah before Pesach. You did the mitzvah. So it's exactly what the Gemara addresses on the fifth of the Mamakamas. A person decides to jump to him. He's going on vacation 2 weeks. He doesn't want to be bothered with the Pidya Ben. He's got some free time now. He's on paternity leave now. He's going to go back to work next week. No, let's do the Pidya Ben today. Apodus b'no b'so shloshim yom. The fifth of the Ramakamas. Rav amar b'no podui, Shmuel amar ein b'no podui. Rav says the Pidya Ben will be chal. And Shmuel says the Pidya Ben won't be chal. I think about it as a whole complicated, a lot of lumbus as to what exactly the case is. But acharei kichos hakolah boils down to the fundamental question that is it shayach, is it possible to pull off the stunt of a Pidya Ben within 30 days or not. So Rav seems to say that it is sometimes acceptable, and Shmuel says it's not negotiable. The only thing is the Gemara says that even Shmuel, who says it doesn't work within 30 days, Shmuel agrees to the following. What if I give the money to the Kohen within 30 days, and I say to the Kohen, hold on to it, don't use it, put it away, put it in your pocket, hold on to it till day 31. The Gemara says, that's for sure, okay. That's all right, because then I quote-unquote gave him the money on day 31. But if I give him the money on day 10 and he uses it, and when day 31 comes, the money's not around, Shmuel says there's no such thing. So again, it seems to be a running machlokes. Can you pull off the stunt of having a little bit of an early pidyon aben? So this could potentially impact us halacha l'mayis in the following way. It's a big discussion in the poskim. When the 31st day falls out, believe it or not, on Shabbos, what do you do? So we don't do pidyon aben on Shabbos for a variety of reasons. Not because the money's muktzah, so we can do pidyon aben with shavakas, with svarim, and give him a 5 shekel pot of shul. There are 3 other ways to give him a pidyon aben money, quote unquote, on Shabbos. But we don't do pidyon aben on Shabbos for a variety of different reasons. Some of the poskim said, you know what we should do? On Friday morning, get everybody together, or you can do it on Thursday also, you can do it a week also as well. Give the 5 shekel to the Kohen, and say to the Kohen, put the money aside, hold on to it, and Shabbos morning will come. Don't hold it on Shabbos, or put it into your drawer on Shabbos. Come Shabbos morning, day 31, I'm going to be yotzei the mitzvah of pidyon aben, you have my money. So the poskim say, you're right, it'll work. You could theoretically pull off a pidyon aben before day 31. Do you ever wonder what, has anyone ever been like a pidyon aben like that? Hopefully not. We haven't done those pidyon aben like that in hundreds of years. You know why? Come to the poskim and say, when are you going to make a bracha? You can make a bracha when you give the money on Friday. It's not yet a mitzvah. You can make the bracha Shabbos afternoon, you're singing Baruch Kelelion, you can make a bracha, you're not doing anything. You don't make a bracha on a Maisa Mitzvah. Therefore, our practice has become not to do a Pidya Ben in that matter. But theoretically, such a Pidya Ben could actually happen. There is a Tshuva Rebbe Kiva Eger that probably has ramifications, definitely in the millions of dollars, could be close to the billions of dollars based on this discussion. Rebbe Kiva Eger has the following observation. He says, the early Acharon discussed the possibility of doing Pidya Bens in the following manner. I'm going to give the money on Friday and tell the Kohen the Pidya Ben should take effect on Shabbos. Isn't that a violation of doing business practices on Shabbos? I'm giving you money now that you're going to hold on to and it will become yours on Shabbos. And Rebbe Kiva Eger says, nobody said that was a problem. The poskim pilpul, is that a good idea, a bad idea, bracha, no bracha? Yeah, no, maybe so. What happened to Shabbos? Why isn't that a flagrant violation of business practices on Shabbos? Says Rav Kaveh, you know what we can conclude from here? The issue of doing business on Shabbos means to actively do business. I can't have a store open on Shabbos, you walk in and I give you merchandise, you give me money. That's what business on Shabbos means. If I'm singing Zmiris and you're taking a nap, and in the Olamas HaElyonim, some transaction is taking place. I don't know about it. You don't know about it. It's all happening in some halachic sphere in some world somewhere. That's not called doing business on Shabbos. So I state in Rabbi Kaveh is a possibility. If you could begin to extrapolate Rabbi Kaveh and his father's dreams, didn't think this would be a $1 billion question, but I would venture to say that there are a lot of people, I don't want to say anyone in this room necessarily, but a lot of people who may be doing these kinds of business activities on Shabbos. They have websites open, they're on online auctions, all kind of things that are going on right and left in the Olamas HaElyonim, in the, we call Olamas HaElyonim cyberspace today. All kinds of things happening. I'm singing Baruch El Elyon. The other person is singing Kari Ban Olam. Everyone's, I'm in shul. He's taking a nap. No one's touching anything. But there's property being sold, being transferred, and back and forth. Money's changing hands. Transactions are happening right and left, and nobody's doing anything. So according to Rikvegi, that's okay. That's not called business on Shabbos. That's a loaded question. I didn't say Osir. I didn't say Mutter. The Doli Poskim who are mafter it. There's some Poskim who are not so thrilled about it. So that's, you can begin to sense, that's quite a loaded question. The source of that question comes from the Sugya about the Jobim, believe it or not. But getting back to that story. So we have a running question now. When does Pidyon HaBed actually begin? Does it really truly begin day 31? Or does it almost start retroactively back to the very, very beginning? So the Rambam seems to say that it actually goes retroactively. It actually starts from the time the baby is born. What should this issue depend upon? Why should we or should we not say that the Chiyah Pidyon HaBed begins immediately, or does it almost just everything is put on hold till day 31? So,
that's for sure, the baby doesn't make it.
Oh, very good, excellent. So, if the baby doesn't make it, then retroactively, there really was a chiyah, right? There was none. If the baby dies before day 31, there is no mitzvah. But that doesn't necessarily indicate anything. What may indicate is the following source, and that's the sixth of the Maamar Kamos. From Tani Rami Bar Chama, Mitoch Shenema Pado Sifta, the Torah says, do Pidyon HaBed, it says it twice, do it. I might think that even if the baby was mitraf, you haven't yet defined what that means within 30 days, I might think I have to do Pidyon HaBed. Kamash will on a possible that you don't have to. What in the world does that mean? So comes Rashi, and the Chavit what Avi said, or yes, Yom HaChavit what Rashi said, on the seventh of the Maamar Kamos, ain't poldim, so says Rashi, ain't tzarch neftosim. If the baby was nitraf, you don't have to be poldim. The emeisbe atzmo, lo itzrich lo the meimar. If the baby died on its own, died naturally within 30 days, of course there's no Pidyon HaBed. What does nitraf mean? Nebuch, the baby died in a natural way. Nebuch, there was an accident. Something happened that the baby Nebuch was killed. So I would have thought, says Rashi, hashti itzrich bashminan. The lo amina, we don't say ilo iktol havichai, lo nefal havalifika. If the baby Nebuch dies naturally within 30 days, of course there's no Pidyon HaBed. It was never really a viable birth in the first place. But if it makes it, it would have made it to day 30 except for Nebuch, the tragedy that happened, I would have thought you have to Pidyon HaBed. Why would I feel you have to Pidyon HaBed? Well, mice, the baby didn't make it to day 31. So Rashi seems to be telling us, day 31 is not written in stone. Day 31 is not an absolute. Day 31 is a way that the Torah gives us to gauge, to measure, is this a healthy baby? Is this a viable baby or not? Baby's born. We don't know. I'm not sure what's going to happen. So you don't do the Pidyon HaBed right away. You wait 1 day, 2 days, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Come 31 days, everything looks good. Then we do the, that's what the Kavanah Satorah is. Then you do the Pidyon HaBed. If the whole waiting to day 31 is just to ensure that it's not a nafel, when it reaches day 31, when did the Chiyuv really start? When the baby was born. Igloy Milsalim Afreya, the baby wasn't a nafel. And therefore, according to Rashi, it turns out that Pidyon HaBed was chal all along, which is exactly what the Rambam says. Tosus on the spot disagrees. I didn't get the Tosus in the Maamar Kamos. Tosus disagrees with Rashi. It's a long attack against Rashi. And Tosus said, if it doesn't make it to day 31, there's no Pidyon HaBed. You know why? Tosus basically says, doing Pidyon HaBed before day 31 is like blowing shofar before Rosh Hashanah. Day 31 is the Zman HaMitzvah. Nothing happens before. It doesn't matter whether the baby's natural, not natural. If the baby's not in this world on day 31, there is no Havim and Shabbat Havim to do a Pidyon HaBed. So when all the dust settles, what do we have here in terms of the mitzvah pidyon? Then we have almost like a convergence of different forces at play here. On the one hand, last week we spoke about pidyon ben as a mitzvah. We spoke about mitzvahs and doing mitzvahs on behalf of other people, and my mitzvah against your mitzvah. Is it my chiyuv? Is it your chiyuv? Last week we spoke about the yoredeya part of pidyon ben. There's a whole other side of pidyon ben. Since pidyon ben is one of those mitzvahs that literally is a mitzvah of ma'os, so there's a notion of shivud nechasim. And you have to ascertain, is there shivud nechasim? Is there not shivud nechasim? So we have to speak a little bit about what shivud nechasim is all about. Then we enter into the next part, even assuming there is shivud nechasim, when does the shivud nechasim start? So the answer to that question may depend upon when does pidyon ben start? So a lot of things, move a lot of moving pieces in terms of the sugya. But the underlying principle that comes clear from this entire Gemara in Kedushat Daf Chavtes is that pidyon ben is not just a religious obligation. It's not just to have a mitzvah like shaking a lulav, putting on tefillin. Whether or not I decide I want to put on tefillin, so whether the bais is going to intercede or not, it's a different story, but there's no mamonos. I'm not stealing. If I don't put on tefillin, it's my problem. I'm not stealing from anybody. But I don't give pidyon ben, I'm taking away money that rightfully belongs. I can't say it belongs to Mr. Cohen or Mr. Katz or Mr. Khan, but it belongs to the Sheva Takahuna, to the group of Kohanim. And one of those Kohanim may come forward and ask us for that money. So we can make a seam on the sugars of pidyon ben. So we have a little bit the Torah says in Pasha Shoftim, there are three different areas of Halacha, Bedam, Ladam, Bedim, Ladim, and Negar, Negar. The Gra points out that Dam Ladam is this of the Heter, Dam Nidus Shalas, then Din Ladin is Dinim Amnis, and Negar, Negar is Tumah V'Tahara. The Gra explains there are three different areas of Halachas. There's Tumah V'Tahara, there's this of the Heter, there's Dinim Amnis. Those who say the tefillah before going to the Beis Medrash in the morning, so yes, the Kiddush Baruch Hu, Shalom Yerada, Shalom Eitam Tov, Lo Atomim, Lo Mutar Asar, Lo Bebe Dinam Amnis, Bebe Isra Hetta, Bebe Dinam Amnis, because we ask the Kiddush Baruch Hu, Siyat Nishmaya, when we learn the Basra, the Dinam Amnis, we ask the Kiddush Baruch Hu, Siyat Nishmaya, we learn Nida, the Isra Hetta, we learn Mishnah, it's almost whatever we learn, so we ask for Siyat Nishmaya, Etub V'Tara, and every once in a while, you enter into an area of Halacha, there's a little bit of a mix between the two. Those in Kolaboka, we spent the last 6 weeks mixing between Kilei Kerem and Ezekiel. So here also, a quick interplay between two very, very different areas. Borrowing money and having little babies and pidyon ben. But when you start to combine the Dinei Torah together, the whole picture emerges that you can't paskin a pidyon ben shayla until you understand the Chashem Mishpat part. And the pidyon ben gufa will enhance our understanding of the Chashem Mishpat. Okay.
Why can't you break up the chiyuv and the time of doing this into two separate parts?
The chiyuv may stop before the mitzvah starts. So you're mechavet to bacharon. We ran out of time for that. The bacharon says exactly that. Very good.